Thank you for coming back for part two of the Fantasy Force Podcast NFL Draft Rundown. We're back with Chris Chung, and why keep you waiting for a good thing? Let's get it! Joining me again, we have Christopher Chung. You can find him on Twitter at Saf for Saf. Saf for Saf. S-A-F for S-A-F-F. You'll see me talking to him frequently on Twitter. If you listen to the last episode, you know, he is a huge draft nick for Dynasty and just for knowing the NFL draft, the rookie's incoming. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back again. It was so much fun the first time. So I'm ready to continue cranking on talking about rookies and drafts.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note we make it sound like maybe we took a day or two in between and gathered some notes together. Same night we've recorded the first round, people. We're just gonna keep going. This is how much we love doing this. That you know, we're gonna break it up into episodes so it's bearable, and here we go. We're gonna launch right into it with. Maybe the most polarizing player in this draft, Doriel Green Beckham, who, you know, obviously the legal troubles are there. You know, he's coming into the draft and he's not going to be listed as a Sooner because he didn't actually suit up for them. Mm. And, you know, when we look at guys like this with the pass and everything, and people are quick to jump and say, well, look at, you know, when we look at the past and, you know, we try and predict what a player will be like, we know that there were concerns about Aaron Hernandez. Obviously, that is such a, you know, such a rare case that things like that, to that extent, are going to happen. But, you know, it was reported that he recently blew off a visit, you know, with the Dallas Cowboys. And I guess that might be what makes me a little nervous. Because if he's blowing off a visit with the Cowboys because he doesn't believe he'll be on the board by the time their first-round pick comes up, I start to worry about, you know, what type of team is he going to fit into? It seems like now he's going to need something of a veteran quarterback who will be able to kind of quiet him down a little bit. Only because if you have an inexperienced locker room, you know, he is going to be like T.O. He's really going to want the ball. He's going to be open on every play. Is that just me kind of blowing things up out of proportion, or, you know, what have you sort of heard and seen, you know, between on and off the field, what he's like?
Oh, yes. Definitely DGB, Doriel Green Beckham, has so much talent in him, being compared to T.O., being compared to Calvin Johnson. Those are such great comparison. And then you have this other side where you definitely is concerning. And you definitely want a strong leadership and locker room surround him with strong personalities that can keep him in place. As far as blowing off the visit to the Cowboys, I mean, for me, last year, this would have been such a big red flag. But as I learned through this draft process, it only takes one team to fall in love with him. And probably for fantasy and selfish purposes, I wouldn't want him next to Dez Bryant. You'll get a combustible solution out of this, and
almost seems like too much personality.
Right. You already have to deal with Dez. He has his own issues and things like that. Green Beckham's issues has more to do with, as you know, his substance abuse. Yes. And the domestic violence case that was never any charges pressed against him. Mm-hmm. So that may be on a different realm than perhaps, say, someone who's party frequently or lazy or didn't want to doesn't want to work, just thinks that he's entitled to a lot of things, which I don't know that much about him to say that. I may project him because he's a such talented kid that sometimes the talent might go to his head. But I'll give him a benefit of a doubt right now. That's not to say that he doesn't have any concerns or issues that need to be monitored.
Okay, and it seems like, especially with all of the kind of attitude adjustment the league is going through towards, its players, to me it seems likely that he slips into the second round, whereas, when the Seahawks still had a first round pick, it seemed like, maybe at 31 he would be a decent gamble because he had a pretty stable locker room with, enough star players. But, when we look at these kind of early second round teams, there aren't a ton of teams that kind of jump out at you where you feel like he would really be, a great addition there. I know some people, have him slotted to the Rams at 41. I think he could even, he wouldn't be a terrible fit, in Atlanta at 42 if they, pass on a wide receiver and decide to go, with like an edge rusher in round one. Round one. I had to take a couple passes at getting that right. But, as you start to look, you see these guys and you think, I don't know where they're going to end up. Someone with a big catch radius like that is obviously, if he, gets a good head on his shoulders, he will be a great player. And, you could put him on the Raiders. I just want the Raiders to add a pass catcher. I don't know why. I seem glued to the idea. Maybe it's because we've had to, hear about how good Denarius Moore was when most of us know that he's not. I just think it'd be nice if they added a legitimate, threat out there. We could start talking about Derek Carr a little bit, but it just seems like a lot of places that are around when he's going to be picking might just not always be the greatest situation. I think Chicago is another one. He could kind of he could play that type of Eric Decker role, in Gase's offense in Chicago with, Jeffrey slotting in and being Demaryius Thomas.
That this is really tough. Initially, I would think that because of his checkered past, he would be tanked so badly that maybe even late second round is not out of the possibility. But right now, he's gaining steam. Maybe this blowing off the Cowboys, maybe we'll knock him back down there. But his talent is so immense. At first, I wanted to give him to the Ravens, but then I realized the Ravens said outright, we're not going to take anyone with a domestic violence past. And that would have been such a great place because I trust the leadership, I trust the organization
They have such a
response.
solid veteran presence there. That's the thing with some of these guys, when you have these questions about them, it seems like, I either want them to go to teams that have that strong veteran leadership, or I want them to go to small market teams where, there's not going to be that constant, media pressure around them. So I almost feel like sometimes that, incoming stress will drive players insane.
Oh, absolutely. It's a mental adjustment for them as well, and that's I always have to remind myself that yeah, they're still kids.
Exactly. I'm 24. You couldn't put me with this much talent. If all of a sudden people started following me around and asking me for fantasy tips, I would lose my mind. Now imagine being athletically gifted and having to deal with all that. I don't, I don't know if I'd be able to rein myself in like these guys do, but you're right. It is an important thing to keep in mind is that, these are kids that are all of a sudden, they're thrust into the league, and you go from being this kid who had a little checkered past to now a grown man whose every move will become, under the microscope.
Absolutely. But going back to your question, just looking down this list, one team that stands out to me, maybe New Orleans, they're getting it ready to move on from Marquise Colston, but it would really depend on where we are with Drew Brees, how close he is to retirement. If he is still there, I think just Brees' veteran presence is more than enough to kind of keep him in place. Now, I know that New Orleans might not be the best place for a guy like EGB.
I feel like they
The
would I feel like they would stick Colston on him immediately and say, This is your new veteran wide receiver NFL friend who is going to be around you all the time. And he would
Interesting that,
certainly fall into a good situation. They do have, that outside opening with, Kenny Stills moving to, getting moved to, I should say, Miami. Which now for me makes that kind of rough because I'm a big Kenny Stills fan. Now I have to figure out whether or not I'm going to root for a player on a division rival because I'm so in love with his talent.
and have to face him twice a week. Well, you can always put Revis on him,
I
maybe.
was just about to say he can always get a little helping of Revis Island. But it seems like, yeah, the Saints, that was overlooked by me. That seems like it could be a solid landing place. Decent veteran leadership, and they're getting or they've already gotten Unger from Seattle, so that's another big veteran presence there. And with the kind of tough grinded out, ground attack they seem to be transitioning towards. Certainly take a little bit of the on the field stress off of him and working with a guy like Breeze who can really place the ball wherever he needs it. Seems like that would kind of be maybe the greatest situation Beckham could hope for. So certainly someone we're gonna, pay a lot of attention to on draft day.
Absolutely. I think if he lands in any of the teams where we feel like he's a good fit, DGB could vault himself into a pretty high, even the top five rookie pick in a dynasty league. Granted, people are still going to be wary about, potentially being suspended, just like Josh Gordon. But in my mind, one of my strategies, if I can even just get 1 year of that immense talented production, I can always think about, trading him off later.
Perfect. Good to know. See, it's always good to know that there are strategies like this that happen. But you look at dynasty players, and they have this type of long-term thought to a pick that I can grab them, and if I start to feel wary about them, I can deal them. It's great. This seems to be the perfect pitch for anyone who's thinking about dynasty leagues. You do kind of become like an NFL GM when you make a move.
Except we're not finance as financially obligated.
Which makes everything much easier. And so moving along, another kind of early round guy who looks like he could make a difference is Duke Johnson. And I know we were talking about him, that I might have to rein in expectations from you here, but I when you look at his skill set, he seems to be a guy, he was quoted as saying he could run the Cowboys offense in his sleep. He knows zone blocking so well. So if the Cowboys pass on a running back in round one, does Duke Johnson become the perfect grab for them in round two?
I think so. I think so. Just because it sets him up to have not to worry about too much about blocking as much as perhaps another team, and it gives him the chance to carve out a role while we wait for Darren McFadden to, get injured sometime later. And I think it's a very good fit to have that guy who can catch from the backfield, who can he runs the best wheel route, and you can hear my excitement as I'm talking about the way he helped my College Canes team to so many wins. It was built on his legs, and it just this the athleticism is, to me, it's out of this world. Even though he may not, even though he may have that little thing where he skipped out on the workout at the combine, his numbers are still pretty decent according to his pro days. And I don't know. I think he has immense potential. He has immense talent. And the only reason why he's not as highly valued right now is where the concern is valid that he is not built to be a 20 to 25 carry running back.
Yeah, so he, looking at his stats now, he's 5'9", 206. Certainly not a guy that's gonna, tote the rock, 25 plus times a game. But I guess with the way NFL offenses are evolving, he's certainly he seems like he would be a great kind of number two back, and a solid 1-2 punch guy. you can kind of get him fresh off the bench, and you know, when a defense might be a little gassed, he's someone who could break a big play.
Yes,
So,
absolutely.
you know, when we look at something like that, he actually might be the dream fit for the Cowboys because you can go from Darren McFadden, and you know, when his ankle breaks for the 20th time in a game, you can kind of roll out Duke Johnson there, and all of a sudden you still have a back out there who has good vision and who is, you know, more than comfortable with his own blocking scheme. So he does seem like a guy who would be a valuable guy in a running back by committee type approach, which I know fantasy players hate hearing that, but it's just how the game is going now that we have to find these guys who can kind of get the most out of their touches.
Absolutely. I think that you put it very well. Nowadays, the RBBC kind of approach, it's like a it's for fantasy owners, but you know, you can still thrive off of them, much like how I think a lot of owners did with Giovanni Bernard or another guy that I'm thinking of right now that's fits that similar body type and usage. I can't bring that to mind, but perhaps maybe you have someone on your mind that you can compare him to.
He seems slightly similar to, I guess, what we thought maybe Freeman was going to be. Freeman for the Falcons. Jarrell Freeman, right? Am I gonna? I'm getting okay. Good.
Devontae Freeman.
Devontae Freeman. I don't know where
Devontae
Jarrell Freeman came
Freeman.
from.
He's the
Yeah.
linebacker for the Colts.
Right.
There's
Exactly.
about three Freemans in the NFL, and I don't blame you for getting them all mixed up.
As long as I'm not mistaking him for Josh, who I had him for his one great fantasy season, and he has been biting me ever since.
I know.
Just
As
hard
a
to let
dynasty
some of
owner,
those
you'll feel
go.
that too sometimes. You're like,
Oh,
I should have traded him
I knew it
so
was
much.
never gonna be so great. But
Right.
it looks like that seems to be sort of what we thought, you know, Devontae Freeman was gonna work out to be, was, you know, in a committee approach with Steven Jackson, and you know, that he was still gonna get his touches in. Turned out the Falcons kind of went, you know, a little more not overboard with the committee, but kind of every running back they had got involved, and I think yeah, I think it's that seems to be what we're looking at, and that's what you should expect out of a running back drafted in the second round in the NFL draft, is that, you know, if they're gonna contribute, they're gonna do it as, you know, part of a platoon. And you know, you hope they can kind of step it up and do sort of what Jeremy Hill did.
That's a fair comp, and I think the expectations for fantasy owners should be placed right about there.
And you know, we're moving on to another guy, another running back, David Johnson, who, you know, he is a big kind of physical runner. You know, he runs right through the arm tackles, and you know, he's a guy that's going to be in, you know, round two or three. And you know, when we look at, you know, kind of late round two, teams that kind of jump out at you, and I just want to make sure I'm getting their pick in the right spot. But like for David Johnson, does someone like the Colts, are they kind of his ideal landing spot? You know, we've heard so much. It seems to be a piece every year that Pep Hamilton is going to establish this, you know, hardcore, you know, ground and pound attack, despite the fact that he has Andrew Luck as his quarterback. So if David Johnson is around there, you know, when the Colts are picking, does he be at 61, I should say, in the second round at 61, is he the guy they should be looking at?
At this point, and I'll admit I didn't do an extensive look for David Johnson because small school tapes are not that easy to find. I know there's a few
Yes.
up right now on YouTube even. I think David Johnson would perhaps benefit more from a scheme that doesn't allow him to think too much about a direction where he needs to go. The little that I see from him is that he would run straight into the gap that he needs to run from the time the play was drawn up, and that he won't make the adjustment if needed. And that's where I'm getting a bit of a concern. He has the immense talent. He has all the skills of a running back that you would like. He can cut, he can spin, he can do the little things well. It's just doing them at the right time is sometimes a concern I see in David Johnson. And also, if he has, I think perhaps maybe that's why I'm leaning more towards the zone blocking, where you just one cut, one gap, you don't have to make too many guesses
You get a
where you
nice
need to go.
downhill runner out of him. Yeah. And
Right.
he certainly
And
has the
just.
frame for something like that. 6'1", 224. He keeps a pretty low center of gravity when he runs. And you're right, finding tape out of these small school guys. Johnson's out of Northern Iowa, in the Missouri Valley Conference. It's just not something that's, you're not going to find a ton of it.
Right. So at this point, I'm gonna say no for Indianapolis, just because I think they still run more of a gap scheme where Frank Gore is a perfect fit, because Frank Gore can make adjustment and find the openings wherever they open up. Whereas for Johnson, you want to limit his options, make him focus.
Okay, so there we go. We see that, not all of these guys, are going to come in and maybe be the guy that you immediately think they're going to be. Not everything translates out of college directly into the pros. And when you look at Johnson, he does look like one of those kind of workout warrior types. 25 reps on the bench. He ran a 4.5 and a 6.82 three cone drill. So he's got this and that, but looks like it could be maybe another 2 years or so until he kind of cuts it. I know running back seems to be one of the positions that is quote unquote easier for college players to make the leap. But
I think coaching will be important. I mean, coaching is important for any prospect, but particularly for him, I think just refining those skills. He has them. He has that set of skills. He just needs to have someone to guide him to put it together and know how to use them on the right time.
okay. And we bounce from one workout warrior to another. Sammy Coates, wide receiver, is coming out, and he's another guy who's been kind of pegged with that label. He put up great numbers at the combine and his pro day. So when we look at a guy like Coates, someone who's potentially going in like round three, maybe late round two, is he another guy who's kind of He can be one of those bigger slot receivers or a smaller outside guy. He stands in at 6'1", 212.
Yeah,
What is
he's
sort of the model we're looking for with Coates?
Coach, he has that wide frame, which I think is bodes well for him to take on hits. Still, I would rather him stay on the outside, just because from what I can tell, he doesn't necessarily know all the correct routes for them over the middle.
Okay, and certainly with I'm looking at his combine results here, 41 inch vertical jump. That is certainly someone you want on the outside.
Right. And he does that well. When his quarterback just heaves the ball up deep, he is right there dashing down and trying to jump up and get the ball, which makes him really he's a really exciting prospect, I have to say, just watching him. But again, he's not as refined, so maybe that's why what makes him more of a second round kind of talent. A somewhat of a little bit of Martavis Bryant in him.
Yes.
So that would be my closest comp for now that I can come up with.
Okay, and we can kind of bring him into the next guy I was going to talk about, who is Trey McBride, like another wide receiver. And McBride is a little further down the list from Coates, talent wise. McBride is another guy that he is a it seems like he's one of those guys that gets kind of put in faster on the field than he is on the track. He ran a 4.4, but he really is someone who can kind of take the roof off the defense there. But when you look at the guys like this, that can kind of they can do a little bit of stretching the field, and then they can kind of work the underneath routes to get you 8 yards on first down. maybe it seems like the biggest thing for them that they have to adjust to is not being able to just run by cornerbacks like they used to in college, because you come into corners in the NFL who can kind of run with you. So it seems like for someone like Coates, maybe, developing a couple more routes, just adding a few things to maybe be, a faster version of maybe Pierre Garçon, and that would be for Coates. Maybe for someone like McBride, a comp I've been running into a lot is like a Brandon LaFell. These guys who seem to get pegged with being faster than they really are. And certainly McBride brings it a little more, with special teams. What are we kind of what are we looking for out of this? It seems like we're now starting to dip into the area where we're saying, well, these guys, at least for fantasy purposes, may never be a wide receiver one, but they can kind of creep up into the consistent 2 to 3, if all the chips fall, in the proper places.
McBride is a hard gauge, but at the same time, the first time I kind of looked at his film, I've actually got so excited. I haven't actually moved any of my prospect ups as much as I had did with McBride. Granted, putting things in context, he does play against lesser competition,
Coming out of William and Mary.
but trying to isolate just him by himself, you can see there's a body control that Sammy Coates does not have. He will fight for the ball in midair, and it pops out to you. If you get a chance to watch him, I would suggest looking at perhaps a breakdown of him by the famous Matt Waldman, RSP. You can see that he has this very very crisp calculation of for jump balls, and
He does. He does. He track. He does. He does track and adjust his body very well.
and I think that is something that just from one film to make me go wow versus the three films that I found on Sammy Coates, it's astounding how much I'm starting to like McBride. But I will temper my expectations just for the pure fact that I don't I'm very cautious about having someone jump that much.
Yeah, he does. He gets dinged, and whether or not it's appropriate, he does get dinged for being like a small school guy. When some guys can say, their best games came against like Alabama, and when you look at someone like McBride who had his best game against Villanova, you see that there is sort of a natural sort of competition level drop off from one to another. But I think it's almost encouraging to see, because you know what? If you're going to be a small school guy, I do want to see you dominate all of those small school cornerbacks. So I feel like he's not the biggest receiver out there. He's 6 feet tall, 210, but I think whoever gets Trey McBride is going to, depending on the offensive coordinator they have, is really going to kind of value having someone like that. He seems like a guy that, when you're not expecting him to make the play, when you see two or three other playmakers out there, he's the guy that's all of a sudden going to break something, insanely well. And you did
I think
mention body control, and he does, it almost seems to like kind of and cross sport comparison, this will never work, but he sort of reminds me of like Dwayne Wade. When Wade would kind of drive the baseline, and my basketball knowledge is so limited, but this, I feel every now and then when I have a good one, I'm like, oh, I can kind of show everyone. When
and I
Wade is
think
on
that
the
well, yeah.
baseline, he does have that same type of, it seems almost Wade-esque the way he's kind of able to adjust to the ball and, kind of turn his body and block off a defender to make a catch. That was sort of what jumped out at me.
Yes, and I think I know what you're talking about when you're comparing him to Dwayne Wade. You'll see the contortion, the twist, the turn, anything. For him to have that type of body control is just reminding me, not trying to compare him to Brandon Marshall, but that's the kind of like
Yes.
Aaron Tripoli has. And for you to put him in like random LaFell, which I think is fair, so that means we'll have to wait a several years before we kind of get something out from him.
Yeah, he certainly seems like a to label him a project player wouldn't quite be right, but to say maybe to get the most out of him, you would have to label him a project guy.
And he'll work his way up the depth chart, no question.
Yeah, so he will he is definitely a guy that when we talk about, the third year wide receiver rule, it seems like Trey McBride is probably going to be someone we're talking about in a few years.
Very good point. Yes, that is absolutely, yeah.
And so we can come back to them, but moving along, another running back that I was actually really excited to talk about, Mike Davis, who is coming out of South Carolina. And what I want to talk about with Davis is less related to him and more about South Carolina. Jeffrey had the problem labeled on him 2 years ago. We saw it last year with Clowney, and we're seeing it this year with Mike Davis. What is going on with the strength and conditioning coach at South Carolina? It seems like he can't get his guys ready for anything because
Yeah, you're.
conditioning is just a concern for everyone.
Yes, and I really wish I could figure out who that strength and conditioning coach is and why he's not fired yet. It really put a damper on a lot of the South Carolina prospect, which includes Mike Davis, because the Mike Davis you saw pre-injury and the Mike Davis you saw post-injury are almost two different guys.
Yeah,
And
you're looking at two completely different players.
right, and not to bring up the ghost of Marcus Lattimore, but that's basically what happened the first time when Marcus Lattimore came back from his first ACL. He
That's
turned
right,
from a
that's right.
speedster into a more of a power rusher. And for Mike Davis, it's almost the same. He turned from a very sharp cutting, very quick moving to a guy who is trying to pound the ball, which he's not meant for. His looking at his size, 217 pounds, he's a bit heavier on it, maybe a little bit decent for NFL size, but 5'9".
5'9", yeah, he's certainly gonna have a slightly bigger build, than 217 leads you to believe.
And you don't want him to get like continuously to pound and pound the ball. You want him to have that speed back. And if you pop in the 2013 film, you see that those cuts to the inside, to the outside, and his way, he looks very comfortable, even in small spaces.
And you hate to say that these things are good because they're certainly not good, but you almost feel like if he can get his conditioning down right, he could potentially develop into someone who becomes one of these kind of bell cow running backs, almost like similar to a Maurice Jones-Drew, just because he will have had, he has had a playing style where he was a kind of shifty runner who could cut well. He's had a little playing time where he was trying to be a wrecking ball out there. And you do want a guy who has, a little bit of both. But it just seems like maybe he more than possibly any other running back drafted this year, it's really going to depend where he goes, who he's riding behind, what he's called out for. It won't just be something that when we see the team he's on, it'll be something we need to see, throughout preseason, how he's being used.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that.
And he is another guy that he would be a decent fit in Dallas, and Dallas actually sent a few coaches down during his pro day, which there's nothing spectacular about that. Teams send little contingencies of coaches for pro days all over the place, but something that generated a lot of talk last year was Bill O'Brien running Tom Savage through a bunch of different quarterback drills. And that paid off when the Texans nabbed him. And it turns out that the Cowboys did something. They sent some running back coaches down to one of Davis's workouts, and the Cowboys were all of a sudden running him through some very specific workouts to get a better look at him. So it looks like maybe if Dallas passes on a running back at maybe round 1 and 2, maybe Gurley and Gordon are gone by the time they're picking, or maybe it turns out they would just rather pass. I know the Cowboys seem to have a more unique valuation of prospects than others. I know the year they drafted Travis Frederick, he was the only one they had with a first round grade on him. So the Cowboys seem to be doing something a little different with their drafting, and it looks like maybe if they don't end up with a running back after rounds one and two, we can start to talk a little more about Mike Davis potentially ending up there, which seems like it would be a good situation for him, kind of sitting behind McFadden, maybe getting a carry here or there and adjusting to the pro game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing for that we know for sure is that the Dallas Cowboys are not keeping it a secret that they're looking for a running back, and it could come in the first three rounds. For Mike Davis, this might be good news to be behind that line. And you're right, Dallas has changed their tunes in the way they draft, and they're no longer like Dallas are going for the best skill position or
Exactly.
Jerry
Yeah,
Jones is
they're not
making
only
weird
looking
moves.
at, the superstar guys who are gonna capture your attention.
Right. Not the big splashes, but sensible guys. And that has paid off over the course of the years. And now we see that we want that running back that's rerunning behind that line.
It certainly looks like whoever picks up the torch from DeMarco Murray, they're going to be fantasy gold. It seems like for fantasy players, it's almost better that the Cowboys did not re-sign Murray, because now you have whatever Cowboys running back ends up starting, they are not going to be, in the top four or five picks, which is exactly where Murray was going to be.
Yeah, and as far as like relating this back to Mike Davis, even if he lands with Dallas, he might be more of a guy that you wouldn't trust in your first year. But as the year goes by, as he's getting healthier and getting back to his shape, to the shape he was in 2013, you might have a guy that that you'll be drafting annually in the top 15 to 20 picks.
All right, so it looks like that's what we're looking at, ceiling-wise for Mike Davis. And
Right.
the last guy we're going to talk about now, he is another round, three to four guy, David Cobb, running back out of Minnesota. And he is an intriguing guy. It looks like, he's not as shifty. He's a more powerful runner, 5'11", 229, so he is certainly built to do some damage between the tackles. And it looks like he would be rated much higher if he could just solve that fumbling problem he seems to be having. Especially in the middle of his season, he fumbled in four out of six games right in the middle of his season at Minnesota. So
That's a high rate.
if he can clean up this fumbling issue, if he kind of runs away from being labeled a Ryan Matthews. What are we looking at for someone like this? Is he someone who could, with his build and everything and his running style, are we looking at someone who could eventually be, the unquestioned running back on his team?
I am cautious about him. Like, I mean, you mentioned a lot of his the things that he needs to clean up on, including his fumble. He doesn't have great speed. I don't know if it's because of the combine. It's been irregular at the combine this year for some reason. But the 4.8 is very slow. It's really concerning. It's a really concerning time. But he reminds me a lot of Zach Stacy, and I know it's been thrown around a lot, even by Dane Brugler from CBS. His style of running is very reminiscent of Zach Stacy. I know right now we're looking at Zach Stacy and we're like, he might have something left, but probably not.
You look at him
He
more like
never
a
played.
complimentary piece now that they have Mason.
Right, but when Zach Stacy came out, there was a lot of buzz around him as well. He was seen as someone who can be a bell cow, who can carry 20 to 25 times for any team. And that it might be true for David Cobb to have that opportunity with a different team where he does not have to compete with like a Trey Mason type of sorts. But these the little concerns like again the fumble and the slow 40 time, they're not easy fixes by any stretch. And that may be enough to keep him as more of a low end kind of running back. I mean, things can really turn around for him, of course, depending on where he lands. And that's more or less likely why we have them slotted at the round two or three. It's because we always come back to the point of it depends where he goes.
Yeah, just you can't. As a running back in the NFL, you can't put the ball on the ground, and it seems like that is maybe the first thing that anyone is going to look at. But something that we've seen it hold back rookie runners in the past, and it does happen to be one of the things he is better at. He is good in pass protection, and more of the more complicated offensive schemes in the NFL ask their running backs to do a lot for pass protection to kind of. Whether it's, calling out the first man they see or staying to one side or even giving a chip block as you go out for like a safety valve, those look like things he can do. And it's actually interesting, the more you read about Cobb, you get to find out that people are sort of overlooking things because he has the right set of strengths. And you mentioned Zach Stacy as your comp. Something I ran into a lot was like a Stephen Ridley. So he's clearly considered like a a big between the tackles thumper who can kind of get it done for you. And I'm reading this off of a draft profile on NFL.com. An AFC running back coach said, "I'm hoping we can get him. He can step right in and play because he runs tough and knows how to pass protect. His offensive line was bad too. He's a way shiftier runner than he gets credit for." Now, coming from a running back coach, I mean, those are just the things you like to hear that, I'm hoping we can get him. That is a coach saying, I would like to kind of do this. We see, how close position coaches get to their guys, and it's one of the reasons that watching Hard Knocks becomes this great thing. And I'm never gonna forget Hugh Jackson's connection to Giovanni Bernard in his rookie year, because you really get to see how closely these guys work together, and how much you can kind of pump someone up. So to know that there's at least one coach out there that is saying, "I really want us to get this guy because he can step right in and play because he runs tough." Hearing those things, that. More so than anything, I saw on tape, that was what gave me a lot of confidence in Cobb. He seems, I'm almost, champing at the bit to get into a dynasty league, because it seems like Cobb is the perfect kind of, round two to three guy to grab who could really turn into something. Seems like he has, like you said, fumbling, and speed are issues that are not the easiest to fix. But if you find a dedicated coach who is really willing to tie himself to that player, it seems like these are, sort of traits that you can eventually work out of a guy and have a really solid running back on your team.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to say that, he can't be coached out of fumbling, because we've seen examples in the past where a player who was prone to fumbling early on, and later on you don't really hear anything about it. Tiki Barber was a good
I was
example.
just about to say Tiki Barber would be my prime example.
Yes, I had that guy for so long. Also Adrian Peterson, people forget that he was prone to
Right, that
putting
he
the ball
came
on the
into the.
ground
Yes.
early in his rookie year. So it is coachable, and you need the right kind of coach. And it really is encouraging to hear that at least one team will take a chance on him, get him ready for week one. And that's very good. So maybe for David Cobb, I know a lot of times when we hear running backs by committee, we think of like, oh, who can be a three down back, and we think about the converse, who can be the pass catching back. But perhaps for David Kopp, he might start out as a two down back, mm-hmm. and just take the, you know, take those early shots, and they may not even need to be in a third down position if Kopp does well with his amount of carry early on.
Exactly. And it seems like he is one of these guys that, and I just know it, he seems like one of these guys the Patriots are going to draft in the middle of, you know, in the middle of the draft, and all of a sudden he turns into the guy that's going to, you know, rush for 1,200 yards, yeah. only starting 12 games.
Yeah.
Something very special rings about this guy, that if he can clean up his, you know, his speed and just protecting the ball a little more, it seems like he's a guy that's really going to do a lot of bigger things, just because of, you know, his actual size and running style in comparison to, you know, a lot of the other players that are going to be drafted around the same time as him.
Yes, I think so. If he can fix these issues, I would definitely be excited to take him, maybe even reach like a few spots for him. And know that I have a guy that, you know, who may not be flashy, who may not be those home run threats, but he's consistent. He will get me the yards and even be relied on due to his size, maybe even relied on in the goal line situation.
All right, perfect. So there you have it right now, our 2015 NFL Draft Rundown. I'm Andrew Jordan. You can find me online at Twitter, at The Fantasy Force. You can find Chris Chung, he's on Twitter all the time, at Saf for Saf. That is SAF 4, SAFF. That's the number 4. And yeah, you know, we're here to take any draft questions, and hopefully after round 1 or maybe round 3, we can put out another one of these, kind of going over who went where. We can talk a lot more about, you know, some of the running backs that are going to go in the second round, because they're just a mixed bag to predict. We really got to see where they're going to land. And this has been great.
Absolutely. It's been fun. If you don't mind, I would like to promote my other account, which is the at Fantasy Price Check. If you are ever in need of, you know, trying to figure out what this person is being traded for in the market, or you are curious about the value of what you can ask for your players, you can always tweet at it, and I'll RT it, so we'll have some discussion going on. But this has been fun. I'm really looking forward to the draft, which is right now. It will happen in 7 days.
Yes, indeed. Yes, we've officially passed over the time frame. We're looking at 1:30 on the East Coast, so It is 7 days from when we're recording it, and 7 days, hopefully, from when you're listening to it. So, yes, give Chris a follow over at Saf for Saf and at FF Price Check. Keep your questions coming. If you got any more questions, tweet them at us. We'll do the best we can to answer them. And, yeah, great having you on the show, Chris.
All right, thank you. This is very enjoyable. Thank you for having me on.
All right, two solid back-to-back podcasts, really bringing you all the draft knowledge we got here on the Fantasy Force podcast. Make sure you subscribed on WordPress. It's thefantasyforce.com. Make sure you subscribed on iTunes so you get the updates anytime there's a new podcast. And again, we're going to try and get Chris back on just to make sure we can really cover the draft once it's complete. All right, until then, peace. We'll be right back.